Hi, and welcome to another episode of Lead Like You Give a Damn, where I speak with leaders and leadership experts who have cracked the code on leading with authenticity, purpose, and effectiveness. Before we start, let me ask if you've seen our one-page strategic growth plan to go from chaos and heroics to repeatable, scalable growth. Go to davemckeown.com/plan to access this super simple four-step system to achieve your strategic growth goals with ease without sacrificing profit, quality, or employee morale. Now on with today's show. I'm your host, Dave McKeown, and my guest today is Jeff Watts. Jeff is the VP of HR at Wilson Sporting Goods. He's also an avid runner, a cyclist, and a self-proclaimed coffee addict. Listen as we talk about building trust and credibility quickly when you join a new team, the future of hybrid working, and the importance of having conversations around our bandwidth limitations. As always, make sure you're subscribed to get notified of each episode as it comes out. Let me know if you have any questions or comments, and as always, enjoy the show. Well, hey, Jeff, thanks so much for being here with me today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, sure. Excited to talk with you, Jeff. In preparing for this interview, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile and your experience, and just the way that it's written struck me that is as looks like it's as intentional and specifically planned out career to get to the top of your industry that I've seen from anybody. I mean, it was just this like series of jumps and leaps and bounds in your industry. Was it as intentional as it looks, or was there a little bit more happenstance in there for you?
Thanks for saying that, Dave. What you wouldn't see on there is that the last 9 years have actually been with the same organization. On LinkedIn, it shows up as three organizations being, Arc'teryx and Amer Sports and Wilson, but they're actually, all the same parent company, which is Amer Sports.
Got it.
So yeah, it's been an intentional growth within the organization, and I'm very fortunate to have had that opportunity with the company.
Mm. And was HR something that you were always interested in? I mean, I saw that you studied it back in your college days. What got you into that in the first place?
Yeah, funny, I actually started my undergrad in human kinetics, and I did one semester, and I just couldn't see what my career would look like. I love, I'm an athlete. I love all things kinesiology, but I just couldn't see a career. And when I looked at the business offerings, HR is what jumped out at me. And so the second semester of university, I switched to that, and that's what stuck. And then, coming right out of graduation, I had this amazing opportunity with the company that I was working for. I was working in the distribution center at Johnson & Johnson. And they were just in the process of buying Pfizer Consumer Healthcare. Mm-hmm. And that was my jump into HR, was this 1 year contract in order to harmonize policies amongst, it was kind of three combining organizations. So thinking about integration of culture, integration of policy. And that was how I got my feet wet in HR. And it was just an incredible opportunity.
So what kept you there? What kept your focus in that area?
The business is people. And the more that you can understand what makes humans tick, what makes humans work, the better business you can do. And I'm just so deeply interested in what is it that motivates people? What is it that influences people towards action, and how to harness that within an organization at scale globally? Every day I'm interested in it and curious about how to do better.
If anything has shifted then over those years, you talk about what motivates people, what influences them to action, casting back to when you were just getting your foot in the water to where you're at now with Wilson. Have the fundamentals shifted at all in that sort of 15-year period, or is it fairly the same?
I mean, the distinct shift that we're all experiencing, I would reference back to, 2020, 2 years ago, 2 years and maybe 2 weeks ago today, to when the pandemic started and everyone went, office-based workers went remote, and it was figuring out, how do you do business in this way? And that for me is a distinct shift, Dave, that I think everyone has been creating from nothing to figure that out. And it's there's a whole bunch of trying, a whole bunch of failing, and a whole bunch of learning. But it's been fun, actually, and to see that actually you can build culture really well in a remote way. And you don't need to be in person or in order to do that.
Yeah. And you made your most recent transition in your career right whenever the pandemic happened. Is that right?
Yeah. So I was actually in Shanghai which is where I was based for 2 years, right when the pandemic started. And so I was on the very last flight out of the country before Air Canada canceled flights. And I got the very last seat on the very last flight out before they canceled, and actually moved into my in-laws' basement for 6 months because, you know, our home was in Shanghai and we had nowhere else to go. So yeah, that was actually how I started my job at Wilson, was, you know, working out of my in-laws' basement for 6 months.
Gosh. Now, was the move going to happen regardless of what had happened on the pandemic, and it was just happenstance you got on the last flight, or was that a strategic decision that you made, like, gosh, I see what's happening, I got to get out of here?
Yeah, you know, I'd already, you know, accepted the job, the move, right. So it was happening, but it wasn't starting until April 1st. There was a little bit of transition period there that was, you know, meant to be in Shanghai, but instead moved out of Shanghai.
Right.
Yeah, it was already happening. It just, the change of location got accelerated.
Right. So then how do you, I mean, it's just got to be a huge degree of uncertainty and complexity. You're making this shift into the new role, you've switched geographical locations, and having to deal with this newfound pandemic that's impacting us all. How did you go about just bringing some clarity to all of that for yourself?
Yeah, Dave, it was a scary time. It was a hard time, you know, building trust and relationship with a leadership team that I hadn't ever worked with, hadn't ever met, and going through some very difficult times and very difficult decisions as we were encountering, you know, the pandemic, you know, the dramatic loss of business and some big decisions to make. So doing that while starting a new role, you know, was absolutely challenging. And I'd say the first, you know, 6 or 8 months was maybe the most challenging time within my career. But I'd say through that, you know, learned an incredible amount. And I'd say that the biggest thing I have to thank is actually my leader, the president of the company, Joe Duty. He believed in me, even though we had, you know, no previous relationship. He trusted me. And it was through that that we were able to build something together. So I really have him to thank for that.
Do you have any specific pieces of advice for somebody that finds themselves in a situation where it's a brand new leadership team that they're working with, where they have to build instant credibility and trust? I mean, I'm guessing one half of that equation was the president and how he approaches leadership, but there's got to be something that you brought to the table in those early interactions that laid out that credibility and trust. Was there anything particular that you can put your finger on?
You know, Dave, I don't know if there's any secret to it other than caring about others, listening to what they have to say, and trying to respond in a way that builds and creates something better in the future. And so that, yeah, that was the approach that I took, you know, person by person. That takes time to scale.
So then talk us through the journey. Did everybody switch to remote immediately? What's been the journey over the last 2 years, and sort of where as a model of working have you ended up with at Wilson?
Yeah, so our office-based staff went, you know, remote right away. Our manufacturing team members, our warehousing team members, you know, continued to work with a few shutdowns because of, you know, COVID-related shutdowns.
Right.
So, you know, that happened overnight. And as a result, we went from an organization that was, you know, very much working face-to-face to working completely first over the phone and then very quickly over video.
Right.
In order to do business. And it was a shock to everyone. It wasn't something that had historically really been done within the organization.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say, like, what we quickly learned, Dave, was that, you know, trusting our people to complete their outcomes, to take accountability for their results, is really the only way forward.
Yeah.
Our team just blew it out of the water. Right. The more empowered they were with flexing time to get the job done, the better results they created. I can't imagine going back and saying, oh, you have to now work from the office.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the approach that we're going to take. Our approach, Dave, is going to be very grounded in, you know, what do you need to do your best work? And we support you.
Yeah.
You are accountable for the outcomes that you need to generate, which includes, you know, building great relationship and rapport with your colleagues and generating whatever the outcomes are that you have to generate. So you need to figure that out. We're here to help you. That's really the road we're going down.
And, you know, it was funny, just I remember casting my mind back to conversations that were coming around 2 years from now. And I mean, that was the one thing that I kept saying to folks was, don't focus on time spent, focus on outcomes. This has got to be the one time, if you've never led or managed in that way, this is the time that you got to do it. Because otherwise, you know, there's just too much happening in people's worlds and lives for them to really be able to fully deliver for you if they feel like they've got to be tied to their desk from, you know, 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock. You know, they've got to be dealing with their kids and probably working with maybe a partner or a spouse in the same office that, or the same home that they weren't working with before. And I feel like it was those companies that made that shift towards more of an outcome-based perspective that were really able to get back onto the front foot and emerge stronger from all of this. Before we go on to kind of the emergence and where you're currently at, how do you send that as a cultural message in an organization of the size and scale of Wilson? Like, how do you say to your leaders, look, we want to ensure that this is all more focused on how we can support our people to achieve their outcomes than it is, you know, anything arbitrary in terms of when and where they should be at their desk?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, it really comes from each and every leader and how they're interacting with their colleagues, their team. And I'd say, like, really clearly just continuing to ask the question, what do you need to do your best work? Mm. And navigating towards resolving that together, right? And it's going to be shifting. It's going to be changing over time. It's not stagnant. It's agile. And that's the way we need to be, you know, interacting. Different people are going to need different things at different times. And we need to be supportive of that at scale.
Did you sense within your population and your people the ongoing feeling of overwhelm and burnout that essentially, I guess, started in the back end of 2020 and almost ran through the whole of 2021, where folks were just spent trying to manage this in a virtual world? Did you have much of that within your folks?
We absolutely did. And Dave, we still have that. And we're in the conversation with our people to make it okay for them to have a capacity conversation with their leader. We're creating tools for them to get into that conversation. And because it's only at the individual level that you understand what your capacity is.
Right.
And we want to make it okay for people to do that. And for many people, that's very new.
Yeah.
You know, to have that conversation around, you know, you've asked me to do these five things. What I think is important is these three things.
Right.
Is it okay if these other two get, you know, delayed and rescheduled? I'd say when those conversations come up, it's not like it's black and white,
right?
It's not like it's like those other two things aren't important, but getting into the conversation on what needs to come first and making it okay to have that conversation and flex work around the organization to where there is capacity. And you know, it's not simple, but that's what we need to engage in as an organization and as leaders in order to help our team members understand that it's okay to have that conversation, that this is a safe place to do that, that we trust you to, you know, share your point of view and perspective, and we need you to in order for us to do our best work, because it helps no one to burn out.
Yeah. And I think you're right. It's such an odd place for so many people to find themselves in, because we just have this innate belief that it's going to somehow be limiting on my career if I say no. You know, the boss comes to you and says, hey, can you do this? And you go, sure, tell me what it is. And then you just add it onto that plate and you just end up, you know, either finding a way to work through it or just dropping stuff off to the side or burning out or pushing stuff further down the organization. And I think I just love that notion of making it okay to have those conversations. You know, I've worked with leaders in the past trying to help them have those sorts of conversations with their team. You know, if you're going to delegate to something to somebody, like, make sure you don't just take their sure, I'll do it, boss, as the answer. Like, really get into their to-do list and say, hey, if we're going to add this to your plate, like, what has to shift and what has to change? And often that can be an illuminating exercise for a leader, because quite often they'll see what their team's working on and they'll say, well, hey, there are two or three things in there, to your point, that, like, we can do that next month or that can come next quarter. Like, let's figure out a way to negotiate our priorities so that you as an individual have capacity, we as a team have capacity, and as an organization, we have capacity. So I think that, you know, if anybody's listening to the show and thinking, hey, this would be a good thing to do, I would encourage you to start having those conversations. Let me ask you, Jeff, what's the best way to begin to build this sort of okayness around it? How do you start to change the perspective on it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say stories are probably the best way. So telling, maybe having the leader of your organization talk about, you know, competing priorities and what the organization is not going to do in an intentional way, that makes it okay for others to start having that conversation. There's very simple things like just the language of yes, if. So, you know, yes, I can do that if this other priority shifts.
Right.
And, you know, your yes only matters if your no is clear, and your no only matters if your yes is clear. And
right.
I think many people in their career are almost taught like it's not okay to engage in that. You know, you're shutting your career down. And I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I really believe that we're hiring people for their brain. We're hiring
yes.
people for their judgment and their point of view. And we need their point of view. That's what we need. That's what we're paying for. And not asking those questions of them, you know, doesn't really get the most out of people. So people need to feel okay to do that.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to some of those sort of older, less helpful perspectives on leadership, which is it's all about, you know, our acts of heroism. You know, we say yes and figure out how to deliver, and we'll be accountable for what we do, and we'll put in the hard yards, and we'll regularly steal victory from the jaws of defeat. And there are times when that approach, you know, if you're getting something new off the ground or you're going through a particular growth spurt, can help you achieve great things, but it can't be the mood of leadership at all times. And I think sometimes some of our leaders show up and believe that that's the way that they need to show up. And so that means taking on more that they can. And actually, just as you're talking, like if we really expect our people to be accountable for what they're going to deliver on, then we have to be able to engage them in a discussion about what are the realistic expectations on which they can deliver. Otherwise, we're just setting them up for failure.
100%.
So where are you currently at in your, in the company's journey from remote back towards a more hybrid environment, back to the office? What are the plans for the next couple of months and years for Wilson?
Yes, we've actually already declared it, and we're really clear that each person is accountable for their outcomes. And, you know, we support you in figuring out what that looks like. So if that means that you're working from the office, fantastic. If that means you're working, you know, hybrid, fantastic. If that means that you're working fully remote and you're still accountable for your outcomes, and that works, then fantastic. And we're actually trying hard, Dave, not to have, you know, rules for the sake of rules. We're really, you know, making it very clear that, you know, we need this to work at the individual level, and each person needs to be accountable for that. So there's an element of, you know, personal responsibility, but at the same time, kind of organizational listening. So, you know, we want to hear if there are barriers standing in the way, you know, systemic issues standing in our way. We need to resolve those. We need to be hearing them and tabling them, discussing them and resolving them.
Are there concerns either from, you know, leadership and the discussions that you've had, and or from your people around the notion that, well, it's all well and good to say, hey, be responsible for your outcomes. That's great. But there's an element of serendipity that happens whenever people are in a shared space, that some people say, hey, that's great for innovation and creativity, and that's one way to look at it. But other people take it from a perspective of there's just those moments, those conversations of building stronger, deeper social relationships that may end up in the folks deciding to be physically present that would cause their career to advance at a speed that somebody who's virtual may not get, just by nature of them not having those serendipitous, spontaneous moments of building deeper relationships. Is that something that you've thought about, you're concerned about, are you mitigating against it, or you think it's just not an issue?
I think it is an issue, and I think we're going to need to continue to solve for it. I don't have all the answers on exactly what to do, but I totally agree with the notion of getting together in order to connect, in order to understand each other, in order to relate to each other. I think we can all agree that that pays dividends in our careers and in our lives. And it does matter. What I'd say is we need to be really intentional about what that looks like. So we're thinking about events, you know, events that, you know, inspire people to get together and want to spend time together, and creating those opportunities. And then I think we're going to need to think creatively about, you know, what that can look like at scale. We have 1,000 people. And it's really easy to think of just the people based in Chicago as the audience, but we have, you know, 25 team members based in Tokyo that are not coming to Chicago all the time in order to, you know, experience Connect. So how are we solving for this at scale, right? That's really, we have hundreds of sales team members based across the US and based across the world that are not, you know, connecting with each other face-to-face in an office, right? They're working from home.
Yeah.
So it's, I think if anything, like this has been occurring for many people around the world in different ways. And maybe the conversation situation we're in is because a lot of people now from a head office perspective are experiencing it. Yeah, for many, they've been experiencing this, you know, disconnect, mm-hmm. you know, either for their whole career, their whole life.
It's just natural that wherever the headquarters is, where the biggest bulk of people are, become the center of gravity from the organization. And, you know, the number of times when I've been running out leadership training programs and I'm told, well, you know, this is all fine and good, but all of the decisions get made from that, you know, locus of control. And we're sort of seen as the supporting folks on the outside. But I think to your point, this monumental shift that we've all gone through has hopefully woken most leadership teams up to the fact that can't be the way that we continue to lead our businesses, that we've got to find a way to truly distribute leadership across the organization, advantages and opportunities across the organization, so that we truly are, it doesn't matter where you dial in from, so long as you work on those outcomes and achieve what you need to, that everybody's progressing at the rate that's appropriate for them.
We've understood that we need new tools, Dave, in order to figure this out and to do our best work. One of the tools we brought in is Culture Amp. And so it's a way to survey your team to really understand how engaged the team are. And you're able to really figure out how people are feeling. And then you're able to take real intentional action in order to resolve their concerns. And so we're doing that for our global team. And our recent survey that closed a couple of weeks ago, we had a 19% jump in the question, will action be taken as a result of participating in this? So what we saw from that, Dave, is people believe that by participating, you know, we're going to do something. We're going to listen to what they have to say. We're going to take it on. We're going to do something. And then we're going to tell them that we did something.
Yeah.
And we just need to continue that cycle. It's never ending. We can always do better. And that's what we're focused on.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important part. Like so many organizations, they'll run out, you know, a culture index or some sort of engagement survey, and folks will take their time to answer it. And they'll analyze all of this data and they'll have all of these discussions, and then nothing really happens with it. And you do that a couple of times and all of a sudden your people are saying, I'm not going to take the time to answer this because you're not listening to us, or you're not, well, you might be listening to us, but you're not putting anything into place for us. And just closing that feedback loop on an ongoing basis, I think, is what keeps your folks engaged. And I think that's fantastic, that jump in the expectation that something's going to happen as a result of it. So Jeff, let me ask you this. What are you most excited about in terms of the near-term future, both in your own career and development and the organization as a whole?
It's a great question. Yeah, from an organization perspective, we are on this path right now of growth that Wilson hasn't actually been on for the last decade. And really in the last couple of years, there's just been real increase in our trajectory. We have a couple of really great success stories where we're now, you know, the ball within the MBA, and just, you know, see so much opportunity and growth there. We're investing in a sport that many people in North America haven't heard of. It's padel. I don't know if you know, it's a racket sport. It's actually the fastest growing sport right now in the world, and it's really growing in Europe, especially in Spain and Sweden. And, you know, they can't build enough courts fast enough. And, you know, we see, you know, enormous potential in that sport. And then we also released last year a new apparel line, a sportswear line, to really, you know, build out more of our brand. And so those are, you know, just some real exciting investments within the organization that we're seeing incredible growth come from. That's really exciting for the team. So there's a real positive momentum within the organization. To answer kind of the second part of your question, for myself, you know, I'm really, you know, focused on how to make work mean something for each person. That's really what I'm focused on, and trying to remove barriers and friction so that people can do their best work. And, you know, solving that person by person, you know, situation by situation, that's what gets me up in the morning and gets me really excited.
Yeah. And that's a fantastic thing to be working on. I think we can all afford to take a look and make sure that we're spending time working on the stuff that has more meaning and more impact, because it's going to benefit us, our teams, the clients that we serve, and help us really, I guess, fulfill what we're here to do. So I think that's a fantastic focus. Jeff, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your perspectives and your thoughts and your wisdom with us. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I just wish you all the very best in the next stage in your career.
Wonderful. Thanks very much for having me, Dave.
Thanks for listening to Lead Like You Give a Damn. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about me, the show, or the work that I do, you can go to davemckeown.com, and I'll see you next time.